Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And here they are, Friday gathering time, and joined in studio by John Cummins, Fine Gael Senator for Waterford and Party Spokesperson on Housing and Local Government, Mairead Farrell, Sinn Féin TD for Galway West and Party Spokesperson on Higher Education, Mick Clifford, Special Correspondent at the Irish Examiner, and Gráinne Nié, Dublin reporter with PA Media. Good morning to you all, ladies and gentlemen. John, can I begin with you? The Taoiseach said lots of people living in emergency accommodation refused multiple offers to go on social housing. Was the leader of this government blaming homeless people for being homeless?
No, I think that's an unfair assertion. I think what he said is factually correct, that some people, and he corrected
the record. No, he said lots first.
Yeah, well, he did correct the record to say some, and that is factually correct. There are people that refuse offers of accommodation that are both in homeless accommodation and in social, awaiting social housing. There was about 5,100 in the last 2 years offers of social housing. About 20% of all offers were refused, and that is just a fact. We can debate the merits and demerits of why that would be the case.
Was characterising to something that was basically anecdotal, wasn't it?
Look, we're all politicians, and we have seen evidence of that. That is correct. But what I actually did yesterday was I discussed it with the Department of Housing. The Q3 Housing for All report will actually have data on this. They're actually going to get data on people who are in homeless.
Did they give you advance light of that?
No, the Q3 report, so the September report, will have data on that. There hasn't been data.
We haven't got that data prior to now. Okay,
no, but what we do have is data on general social housing offers, and we know that 1 in 5 are refused. And we can, you know, as I said, debate the merits and demerits of why people refuse offers. But some local authorities have been very proactive in this space. They've introduced choice-based letting systems, which actually put up an offer of accommodation on a system. People express an interest in it, and if they subsequently refuse an offer after expressing an interest in it, they're suspended for a period of 12 months.
And that's only in operation in some counties.
Correct. It's in operation in 17 of 31 local authority areas. I understand that an additional 5 will come on stream by the end of the year, but really we need all local authorities to have that system in place, because it has reduced, yes. The evidence from Waterford, I think they have it in Galway as well, has reduced the numbers of refusals of offers of accommodation. So it is important that would be rolled out across every local authority.
Mairead, undoubtedly there are people being offered accommodation that doesn't meet their needs and they have to say no thank you very much to it. But can you say without fear of contradiction that there aren't people who are saying no to housing that others would give their back teeth for?
To be honest now, when I heard Leo Varadkar say this, I just thought to myself, he's gaslighting once again. He's gaslit a whole generation of young people who have had to emigrate because they have no chance of getting housing, because they just can't see a future for themselves here. And now we have, for the first time ever, over 12,000 people homeless. And the Taoiseach, rather than saying, right, putting his hands up and going, look, I've been in power over 10 years, I've been in government and I've failed on this. I've failed on the issue of housing. You don't have a situation whereby you have over 12,000 people homeless for the first time ever, and you can't go around and say, oh, well, this is maybe because a few of them have decided that this house doesn't suit them or whatever it may be. And there are different reasonings for it. But the reality here is the only people here to blame in relation to this housing crisis is the government. And to start to turn around and try and make this thing so it becomes this thing in the media then of people saying, oh, well, you know, all these people, they're refusing housing and sure, that's why they're homeless. When people have to go into emergency accommodation, when people get a notice to quit in the door, they are absolutely terrified. And it's not just, sometimes we talk about this in relation to numbers, but there are families behind these, families who the first time in their lives actually have to go into emergency accommodation, and it is absolutely terrifying for them.
Families that are being gaslit by your Taoiseach.
I think that's totally unfair. We are making progress in relation to housing. The data would say, let's be factual in relation to this. The number of new homes being built in this country is up. The number of commencements are up. The number of planning permissions are up. There are 700 first-time buyers every week getting mortgage approved, the highest since records began. There's over 400 first-time buyers every week in this country that are purchasing their first home. We have the highest number of social housing in the country since 1975.
Of accommodation ever. 12,000.
And we are working night and day to try and reduce those numbers by increasing social housing. The tenant in situ programme has been working well over the last of months.
It's to the extent that it should be. They need to hire way more staff, because I have a situation in Galway where constantly people are coming to me and their landlord wants to sell to the council and have that whole tenant in situ scheme. People are being left high and dry for weeks and weeks on end.
Well, I don't know what the situation is in Galway, but I know the local authority staff in Waterford, in my own area, there's about 60 tenant in situ applications that are currently in process. Quite a number of them have been closed out already. So progress is being made in relation to that.
Mick Clifford, is the Taoiseach gaslighting the homeless, or has he put his finger on a real problem?
I'd go with the former, Philip. There's a context in which he said it. He said it in relation, he said, these are one of the things that the government have no control over in terms of housing. That's for the birds. I mean, the number of people who turn down, and people do turn down, some people, there are very genuine reasons in some instances and there are not genuine reasons in others. The council decide what is genuine and what isn't. Those that are not genuine, they just move on to someone else. It has no impact on the housing crisis. Leo Varadkar said that for two reasons. One, to deflect from the real issues that are a problem in terms of the housing crisis, and also, unfortunately, to appeal to a certain constituency that do believe this thing of those who are on the social housing list are getting everything, we're paying for everything. The people, the infamous or famous people who get up at the dawn, according to Mr. Varadkar, that's who he was appealing to. And to be honest with you, it was kicking down rather than taking some responsibility for the issues that are there.
John, it's a fair point, isn't it, that when somebody refuses to move into a house, that house doesn't suddenly evaporate?
No, it doesn't evaporate, and it's allocated to someone else. But what we do have an issue with is the turnaround times from some local authorities. Some local authorities can turn around a reletting of a council property within a period of about 14 to 19 weeks. Some local authorities take over a year to relet that property. One of the reasons for that is refusals. Another is because they don't have single frameworks in place in order to get the works that need to be carried out on a property done quicker. They go out to tender and through that systems, whereas other local authorities have a much more streamlined approach. But the CBL system does work. It has reduced the turnaround times in the local authorities that it operates in, and it needs to be in every single local authority.
Grainne, was the Taoiseach speaking to a certain constituency? And if he was, does it work for him?
Well, I mean, that's what politicians do. They speak to their constituencies, and they, you know, we hear politicians constantly mention, you know, case studies in their own areas because they want to be seen to be representing people in their constituencies. But I think it goes to, you know, even the focusing in on refusals and the amount of people who refuse social housing, that even goes back to a deflection from the homeless figures themselves, because at the start of this year we were told that they were leveling off, that they were going on the right level, and they have not done that. We are 6 months into the year and they are going in only one direction, and the government has not had a handle on it. It can quote figures on how many people have bought houses with grants and things like that, and that is progress, of course, but on the homeless issue we have not seen progress. And it's a kind of a sensitive point for the government, because I don't think they have an answer on how exactly to reduce the figures. They tried the eviction ban, it didn't work. They are trying to increase supply. One bed homes are a kind of a huge part of that. And then, you know, the Taoiseach mentioned in those same comments where he said, you know, plenty of people in emergency accommodation refuse social housing. He also said that there are other issues in terms of, you know, the proportion of people who are not from Ireland who are in emergency accommodation, so they have no entitlement to social housing. So those are causing challenges, which are all kind of constructive points to make. But out of nowhere, he said, it seemed out of nowhere, under pressure from Richard Boy Barrett, he seemed to say that plenty of people refuse housing. I think because they're under pressure over what to do about this issue.
John, let me make a helpful suggestion. Bring back the eviction ban.
Look, I don't think the eviction ban worked. There was actually an increase in the numbers of people going into emergency accommodation during it. And all it would do is...
You don't know that was as a result.
But all it would do is put a glut of people out the other side of an eviction ban. Unless you're suggesting, as some have, that we would have an indefinite eviction ban. That's the only way that it would have the impact. And some people say...
Some people say
an indefinite eviction ban and freeze rents, and it sounds great. But look at what happened in Berlin when they done exactly that. It was struck down by the Supreme Court. You had a 50% reduction in properties available for rent. And the last thing we need in an already constrained rental market is to reduce the number of properties available to let even further.
Well, one thing I definitely won't be lectured on is in Berlin. My mum's from Berlin. All my cousins live in Berlin. They're able to live and stay in Berlin. I don't know many families where they're able to actually, all cousins are able to stay and live in Dublin and rent places and buy. I understand what you're saying in terms of the Supreme thing.
But just
to be very clear, see
it
the
is
way.
A fact.
Oh, no, I get that, right? But see this whole concept of trying to make it out as if there's other places where it's getting worse.
Did it reduce supply? There is nowhere in Europe.
Okay, do you want to talk about the eviction ban, right?
What Sinn Féin are proposing in Ireland is what was done in Berlin. It reduced supply.
That is not true. And just to be clear here, you're saying that during the eviction ban, that more people were put into homelessness. What we have seen and what your own Minister for Housing said on the television, the time when we were discussing the lifting of the eviction ban, he said, I know that this will increase homelessness. And what we have now seen is that more and more people are going into homelessness. So for the first time ever, we're seeing under your government over 12,000 people.
Sinn Féin wanted to have an eviction ban and they wanted to lift. They wanted to lift it on Christmas week. Then when that was pointed out to them, they said, we'll actually change it and now we're saying the end of January.
I think there might be a clever idea for a government to deliver housing in relation to rents.
If you say you know Berlin well, you really should look at the impact of what that rent freeze did in Berlin.
Well, I have absolutely
market.
No problem bringing it to Berlin and showing you all the housing that is actually at an affordable rate compared to what is here in Dublin and in Galway City, for example. And not just saying that because Galway said people mentioned their increased prices, reduced stock, and
the very last thing we need in a constrained rental
market is to do
just that. You
know what you're supposed to do during an eviction ban, right? The whole point of the eviction ban is that you're supposed to increase supply at that moment in time.
So why don't you? All right then, folks, we're going over quite a bit of old ground here. I'm going to move on. Mick Clifford, this was the week in which Ireland saw people in pubs watching Oireachtas committee proceedings, if you can imagine it.
That was probably the best place to watch it.
Well, what would they have learned about Oireachtas committees as a way to get to the truth?
They would have learned it is not a very good instrument, the way it's conducted. It has the potential to be so, but unfortunately, we have a scenario. This thing about RT and Ryan Tuberty is an obvious example. Why there needs to be two separate committees inquiring into it, asking more or less the same questions, even though nominally their briefs are for different areas, one's for money, the other's for media, culture, etc. Then you have the situation that you have overlap between those committees. You have a number of members in both committees, like the cats who got all the cream. Effectively, they have two bites at their 5 minutes of fame. And there is neither rhyme nor reason to the questioning. Now, out of that, some members of those committees do ask very relevant questions. No question about that. And they are forensic in their approach to it. Others simply are not. So it's all over the shop. What should be done in any scenario like this, in my opinion, is if you have a situation, take the one even at hand, you get some form of an investigator to do an outline report on it. The committee view this in private and they decide among themselves, you take A, I'll take B, you take C, etc. And that. The problem with that is they would be subsuming their own personal interest to the collective. And as far as I can see, in a lot of cases, that's not the reason for being on a committee at all.
Was there not a huge value, though, in which the speed with which an Oireachtas committee was able to respond to an emerging crisis and conduct its affairs in public, in front of the public?
In front of the public, absolutely. In terms of the speed, you could say that. But look at the speed. At 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, a book of documents landed. The parliamentarians were expected to get their heads around that and formulate questions in an organised fashion in less than 2 hours. Speed is one thing, but that's way too speedy, you know. And I think there's a problem. As I say, there is good work done there, but It's a mishmash. There's the good, the bad and the ugly in there, to be honest. A
lot of grandstanding, a lot of waffle, a lot of verbiage is what he is saying. Mairead, stand up for your colleagues on the Public Accounts Committee.
Well, I didn't say it was at all that.
Well, he did say that some people ask very good questions and I'd love if he'd clarify which ones, and I'm sure it's all Sinn Féin. Only joking. But I actually think Oireachtas committees work quite well, to be perfectly honest, from the work that I've done on committees. But to be honest, I think the problem
is... would say that.
No, I actually genuinely find that in comparison to the Dáil chamber, like people are just speaking, but in committees you can go through stuff.
But in comparison to what he was talking about, an outline, a scoping investigation beforehand, which would arrive at facts and be laid before the committee.
I don't think the problem was the questioning. I think the problem here was the lack of answers or the different types of answers depending on who was in front of the committee and what day you were having it and what had happened at the previous committee.
But the
problem, I don't think necessarily
was also
it was the questioning.
That you have members of committees who make statements without a question mark at the end of them. Now, how on earth is any witness supposed to answer them?
Oh, well, like, I mean, I think, though, that, you know, you're always going to have certain people who are probably better at doing certain tasks, like, let's be frank, in anything, so, and who have different strengths and stuff like that. But I do think that, to be fair, if you look, like, I'll take Imelda Munster as an example, who's a colleague of mine, and I'm sure there's plenty of others, who ask questions, to be fair, forensically, try to get information out of them. And I think she should be awarded a dentistry kind of programme or something, because she was trying to pull teeth out of them and she could get nothing.
Ah, well, hold on, there was also the same TD, to be fair to her, and she did ask some questions. But some of the ways she addressed some of the people who were there was very unfair, and I think would have been allowed.
She was pulling teeth without an anaesthetic at some time, maybe.
I think there definitely was a mixed bag. We did get a lot of information, sometimes because of the hard work of TDs, sometimes despite the type of questioning. But a lot of the time, you know, a question was asked, which was a good question, and the person wasn't given a chance to ask it. And as a journalist, you're sitting there and you're going, let them answer the question, let them, you know, give whatever answer they want, so we have their response to that on record. And that was quite frustrating at times. And then there were other points where, you know, the question would be 3 minutes long and they have 4 minutes allocated time. And you're like, we don't need to hear your voice. Keep it short, keep it precise, go in with the scalpel and get as much information on the public record for people watching committees and pubs as you possibly can. And in some instances, there were some brilliant performers, and in other areas it was quite frustrating to watch.
John, is there any conversation going on within Fine Gael as to what the future of RTE should be, as to how it might be funded in the future, if it is to continue, if there is something that can emerge from the ashes of this?
Look, the Taoiseach hasn't been prescriptive in saying what would be there if an ask comes for additional money from RTE in terms of conditions. We know there's now, as of yesterday, I think 5 investigations underway.
I'm talking beyond the immediate funding crisis, though. I'm talking about its longer term future funding model.
The Taoiseach has said he wants to address that within the lifetime of this government. And I believe the Taoiseach when he says that, but we do have 5 investigations underway. We do have to allow them to carry out their work. And obviously, any additional monies or stopgap monies would have to come with significant changes in governance and reforms,
again,
which I hope that Kevin will be able to implement here.
Looking beyond the sticking plaster, though, to an actual cure. What does that look like in your mind? Is it centrally funded, RTE being funded from the Exchequer, or do we continue with the licence?
Well, we had the Future Media Commission that done a huge amount of work in relation to this. They did say that the combination approach was the best approach to continue. I don't know whether that has to be readdressed now at this point. I do think that we have to allow it has to be informed by what comes out of those reviews.
Mairead Farrell, is there a social justice issue for Sinn Féin in this? Because a licence fee is a regressive way of funding your public broadcaster. A progressive way to do it would be within the taxation system, wouldn't it?
Well, I suppose my understanding, and look, I'm not on the media committee or that, so my understanding isn't probably as in-depth, but my understanding is that there was a group put together to actually look at all this in terms of licence fee and that. Obviously, you wouldn't want a situation when people are, obviously, as we all know, really struggling at the moment with the cost of living, that would be raised at this point or anything like that. It's my understanding that now, because of everything that's been going on, that group isn't continuing with that work at this moment in time.
I'm not asking you to comment on their work. I'm just asking you for your attitude towards the idea of saying, look, €160 is far too much for an awful lot of people. So let us fund this place, if we are to continue to have a public broadcaster, let us fund this place on the basis of you pay as much as you would into general taxation. If you're not paying much tax, well, then you won't be paying much for RTE. If you are paying a lot of tax, well, then you will be one of the people who's funding RTE.
Yeah, no, that's a fair enough point. I don't think that at this point we're saying to, you know, really commenting on getting rid of the licence.
Okay, so what you're saying to me is that Sinn Féin doesn't have a plan for RTE in the future, no?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that literally there is actually work ongoing to see exactly how you can change it. And rather than me making up exactly what we were going to do, is I do think it's important to actually look at the facts. And one of the things that we've definitely learned over the last 3 weeks, it's actually really important to get facts together and to analyse them and then make a comment rather than going in front of committee and changing your story every week.
Mick, the direction of travel in this has been countries like Belgium, like Finland, like the Netherlands have in recent years abandoned the licence fee model and have gone to direct taxation. In France, they're getting rid of commercials from their TV channels altogether. Should we be following suit?
We should certainly look at it. I mean, the problem is, the size of the country is one issue. The other issue is, I think any government, when they have already a scenario in there that they're getting €160 a household, are going to be loath to turn their backs to that income and go directly to exchequer funding. But there's definitely a case to be made for it. There's also a case to be made for a household charge to contribute to that. That went west as a result of the reaction to the water charges, for instance. Irish people, for some reason, do not like new taxes. They're willing to a large extent to put up with what you might call hidden taxes of some sort. They don't like new taxes. The other thing, of course, is do you bring in the big tech companies?
It wouldn't be a new tax, though, would it?
Well, household charge.
Household charge, yes.
They won't go near that. But do you bring in something like, for instance, a levy on the big tech companies, the Googles, and all of those?
Mm-hmm. As they've done in Spain.
Yeah, and that is definitely something to look at.
I think that would have to go to other media.
That's the other point I was going to make, that public service broadcasting, the fractured nature of the media now, the spread of disinformation, you have to spread the remit of what public service journalism and not just broadcasting is.
Because that's what the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach always reference, is that when they try and define what a public service broadcaster is they reference, you know, information about about COVID-19 during the pandemic. And other, you know, the first thing I always think of was it wasn't just RTE that was doing that. So how do you define what a public service broadcaster is? One of the things I think of is the resources that RTE has, for example, to put a journalist in every count centre across the country during elections that other media don't have the resources to do, but it is important for democracy. Mm-hmm. So I think what's really interesting about this debate is it opens up that Pandora's box of what public service broadcasting is. It's hard to compare it to other countries because every country has a different relationship with their media than they do in their own country. It's a very cultural thing.
Let's move on to the Children's Hospital. €1.4 billion in the budget, €2.2 billion and rising now, we understand. Supposed to have finished last August, absolutely nowhere near that. John, Fine Gael boasts about being careful managers of the public finances. That rings a little hollow now, doesn't it?
Well, look, we don't know what the final bill will be. I know you're citing €2.2 billion there, but the most important point, and I always come back to
this
in relation to the Children's Hospital, is that it is going to be a state-of-the-art facility, and I genuinely don't think that there's a family in the country that unfortunately will have to use its services in the decades ahead, because let's be honest, this is a hospital for the next 100 years. I don't think any of will say it was a bad idea to build this hospital. We have experienced significant delays as a result of COVID-19. The war in Ukraine has resulted in supply chain issues. We've had significant inflations. Delays equal cost when it comes to construction projects. It is a complex construction project, but the most important thing is it is being built. it will be a facility that will be of benefit to children right across this country when it is completed. And all effort is going into trying to get that expedited as quickly as possible. It's 89% substantial completion now by the contractor, and we need to see that work continue.
Mairead, the reason that this happens is that everybody lowballs the cost of a project at the outset to make it sound more politically palatable to actually get it off the ground. You're not likely to be able to do things any differently when you go into government, are you?
Well, I actually had a bill in front of Dáil. I think it was... My years aren't great anymore, I think. But I think it was 2021.
Yeah. We're all allowed to subtract 2.5 years from lives.
Sorry, I'll just pretend I'm 30 now. But it was the regulation of tenders bill, and it was to look at that specifically. About how, you know, because this whole issue of the lowballing, obviously it's a massive issue, we're aware of that. And it was the regulation of tenders bill to actually make sure that we look at, say, like, that if there's one that is way less, you know, that it's not just that you take whatever's kind of on the least. But unfortunately, the government went against that. I think, to me, this whole thing, right, obviously the main issue here about the children's hospital is actually the children themselves, right? And I have to say, like, we're failing the children. You know, and John does say that it's going to be a state-of-the-art facility.
And it will.
But it fairly want to be. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're talking about over 2 billion. But the point is all this delay and not being able to tell us when it's actually going to happen, how much it's going to cost. Like, to me, that just seems like really bad management. And to me, it just seems like the Minister of Health is kind of just standing on the sidelines looking at this chaos that's happening around him, rather than us taking a very kind of practical, hands-on approach. And as you say, Fine Gael love talking about prudence. It's like the buzzword, I think, of the Fine Gael parliamentary party. But, like, we don't see prudence when it comes to this.
Do you think Stephen Donnelly would be much used down on the building site?
Not particularly, no. I'm sure he's used a lot of things, but I don't know about that. We're bad in this country at various phases of building certain things. For a long time, the roads, we were running cost overruns everywhere. They got to grip with that eventually. This is something new. I think one of the issues I would say has to come back to is the project management at the beginning of it. What was the nature of agreements? And that's down to the government ultimately too. What was the nature of agreements there? It was going to be cost overruns and everything, but how much leeway does the contractor have there? But the big thing now is that what appears to be serious tension between the board and the contractor, and they seriously want to get past that, but do so not in a way that's just throw as much money at it as is required. Like, there has to be some kind of controls in there.
Go on, yeah.
I think one of the questions about the state-of-the-art hospital I would have is, did it need to be a state-of-the-art hospital? And that sounds, you know, bizarre at first.
The children of Ireland deserve nothing less.
Well, I think this is part of the argument that is given. But it could have been functional, effective, appropriate for looking after very sick children and their families, you know, travelling from all around the world. But did it need to be as extravagant a build as it is? And I think that's one of the questions, you know, that I would have when we look back at it. And, you know, we talk about lessons being learned. I think the frustrating thing about the Children's Hospital is the ultimate kind of example of how the state is bad at infrastructure and big idea projects. And it goes back to the Metrolink, it goes back to the public transport system being so slow to being updated to be effective for people. And it feels like whenever there's a big project that needs to be done, it completely goes out of the government's hands, and it's hard to catch rein back in, partly because the state is so small. If other governments and other countries are dealing with big projects, you're dealing with a bigger government, a bigger state organisation to reel companies back in.
And that is where I'm afraid I'm going to have to draw the conversation to a close for the week. Grainne, thank you very much. Grainne Nié, Mick Clifford, Mairead Farrell and John Cummins. That is all, as I say, for the week. If you want to catch up on anything you've missed on this morning's show, please go to the RTE Radio app. The programme was produced by the series producer Alistair McConnell, researcher Kieran Dunn, broadcast coordinator Louise Kerr-Ross and on sound Ruth Kennington. Now, at exactly midday, here's Louise.